You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Yo, could you please pass the billy, my G?
Sure thing. Whoa, that was a big old hit from that Zooter. Are you sure you're okay?
Yeah, I'm... Wait, I think I might be...
Greening out! A sustainability-focused segment where Hoff Trough talks to local legends who help make Dunedin a cleaner, greener place. From worm ranchers and penguin protectors to community garden organizers, Greening Out is Radio 1's premier stop for all things sustainable.
Are you feeling better now?
Yes, much better. Just give me the chippies, please.
All right, folks, it is time for Greening Out, and we have a very special guest. We have Associate Professor. Is it Associate Professor?
Or
just regular Professor? Full-blown Professor. Professor Sarah Wakes in here to korero about sustainable materials. Morena, Professor, how you doing?
Kia ora, Zach. Yeah, I'm doing good, thank you.
Nice. Have a chill commute over here?
Yeah, just a walk from Science 3, so yeah, mm-hmm. Pretty nice.
Nice, yeah, no, it's a relatively mixed day. I'm not too sure what's going to happen.
Pretty typical Dunedin spring day, I would say.
Yeah, no, very much so. But yeah, thank you very much for coming through. No, you teach a paper, I think it's MATS 204, which is a summer school paper about sustainable materials. I want to know, first off the bat, what is your favourite sustainable material?
Oh, that's interesting. I think it's anything that can be reused or recycled. So I very much like metals, and in fact aluminium I think is probably my favorite material. And why is that? Because it's one of those materials that's the most valuable to recycle. It can be recycled infinite number of times, and so much energy is saved when it's recycled as opposed to using virgin aluminium. So if you've got aluminium cans, put them in the recycling bin. Mm-hmm. That's one of the best things you can do.
This might be out of your wheelhouse, but how much out of all the things that do actually get recycled, what proportion would you say aluminium gets recycled?
I don't really know, to be honest. But I think, you know, we use a lot of, you know, we drink a lot of, you know, drinks from cans. So, yeah, I would hope that quite a lot. I think it's one of those things that people are quite used to recycling now. So, please put them in the recycling bin. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic resource, and it is something that gets recycled because it is so valuable. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure. So, you're teaching the summer school paper, MATS 204, all about sustainable materials. Yes. What makes a material sustainable?
That's interesting. I think all materials can be sustainable. I think it's a very complex thing, and this is what we try and teach in the paper. Sustainability is a very complex subject.
Yes.
So it depends on how it's used, depends on how long it's being used for, depends on how it's made, it depends on where the material comes from. Does it come from a non-renewable source, or does it come from a recycled source? Does it come from a source that can be grown again? And if it can be grown again, you know, does it use a lot of chemicals, a lot of water? Mm. It's really complex, and I really think there's mostly no good or bad choices. It's really about treasuring what you have and really treasuring the materials and the products that you have. Mm. So making sure you use things a long time, making sure if you need something that maybe you look at secondhand and you don't buy new, you know, if you can.
Yeah.
And repurposing, swapping, doing all those sorts of things. Mm. I think there are a few materials that we would say, please never, you know, use things like PVC, which, you know, is pretty nasty. Trying to reduce what plastics we use, that can be difficult in some areas. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think everything, you know, can be sustainable on a scale, mm-hmm. and everything cannot be sustainable on a scale.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As many things happen to be shades of grey.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
The interesting thing is, though, is how when people do think about their consumption, they do go in more of a... what's the term? My goodness. Not deontological, the opposite of deontological. We look at the, I guess, the output and the effects of what you're doing and you're buying.
Mm,
I forget what the term is, but it's the opposite of deontological. Whereas it's better to teach, you know, principles about what you shouldn't, maybe shouldn't buy, which I would say maybe don't buy from Nestle or like you know, those horrible, horrifying corporations. Yeah.
And I think it can be difficult. One of the things, and I think when you talk about sustainability, it can be quite depressing. I think it can be quite, you know, because it's all about the bad consequences, the bad things that happen. And I always like to, you know, teach and talk to students, you know, there are always things we can do. And it doesn't matter how much money you have or what where you are in your life, you can always do something. You can always recycle. You know, even if you only have $1, you can choose where you spend that. You can choose whether you buy something secondhand with that or you don't spend it at all, actually. Or you can choose to you know, spend it on something from, you know, a fast fashion outlet. So, you know, so even if you only have a limited number of dollars, you can still do something with that. And there are lots of things you can do without any dollars. So, you know, to make your life more sustainable. But it is a series of small steps. And I think we often think that we have to jump straight in and become plastic free, or we have to jump straight in and say, I'm not spending anything in a year on clothing.
Yeah.
And I think that I certainly know personally that is the wrong approach for me, because, you know, it's too much. You know, there's always going to be a circumstance where you need to buy some new underwear or, you know, whatever, and you break it, then you feel guilty, and then you don't do it. I think it is really, for me, a series of small steps, and then you find that, you know, the first small step was maybe straightforward, you know, and then you try another little small step that builds on that or is in a different area. And that's one of the things we do in the paper. We get everyone to do what we call a sustainability challenge. And it is a small, can be a really small goal that is, we do a backcasting thing where we go, well, where would you like Aotearoa to be in 2040? Mm. And then what's a small step that can take you there? So you might want see that we want New Zealand to be plastic free in 2040. Well, what can I do as a first small step? Well, maybe I'll limit the plastic when I go food shopping as much as I can. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'll take some bags to put my veggies in rather than a plastic bag, you know, or I'll try not to buy my meat, you know, in plastic wrap.
Go to the butcher.
So much.
Yeah,
go to the butcher, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then you can build on that, you know, maybe, oh, well, okay, I've got used to doing that. That's now a habit. What can I do next? So, and I think that's it. We should never feel guilty about not doing enough. We should always just be trying to do those small things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we build a habit and it changes our lives and changes, you know, and helps the environment and the communities.
Yeah, so, totally. Yeah. What's the most, not necessarily outrageous, but the most incredible sustainability challenge that you've seen someone issue themselves?
Quite a few students decide that they're going to try and save energy, you know, energy. They're at home maybe for the summer. This is a summer school paper. And it's a distance paper, so students can be anywhere, which is brilliant. And they decide they're going to have cold showers.
Yeah, oh, wow.
I know.
Wow.
I'm just, every time I read one of those, I'm like, oh my goodness. And they jump straight in. They've never done it before. And I'm like, you are so brave.
Yeah.
I really think that's brave. You know? So, you know, and maybe some of them embrace it and it's good, but that might be where, well, maybe you just turn the temperature down a notch to start with.
Yeah.
That would be a smaller step.
Just have shorter showers, maybe.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, you know, people do what they want to do, you know, and they try it. And the idea is that we do this via a discussion board and people support each other. So as it's a distance paper, they're not together in a room. So they get to know each other through this discussion board. They make little videos about their challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of them are doing similar ones so they can, or are in similar places for the summer, and they can help each other and give tips and, you know, encouragement so that we all can grow. Mm-hmm. And myself and my fellow teacher, Linda, we also take on a challenge. So, you know, we do the same as the students.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's really important because we can then talk about the struggles we might be having with our challenge.
Yeah, exactly. So you're all in the same boat.
Absolutely.
Does anyone take, like, you know, maybe go vegan or teach themselves to sew or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. See, that's what I would do. Make it like, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Those are ones. And again, that's the vegan one's really interesting. So, you know, we get people who, you know, maybe eat meat eat, you know, 2 or 3 times a day and they want to go fully vegan. Mm. And they try it and they discover that maybe that's a bit too much, you know. So, but that's fine. They're learning and that's good. What I love about the challenges like that often is that they bring their family or their flatmates along with them.
Mm.
So they might say, well, okay, I'm doing this, so I'll cook a meal twice a week and my whole family will have a vegan meal or a vegetarian meal,
yeah,
you know, twice a week.
Yeah.
And I love that when students get their family or their flatmates or sometimes their workplace involved in their challenge. So they're actually teaching sustainable practices to more people. So the word is getting out, you know, broader than just the people doing the paper, which,
yeah,
I love. You know,
yeah,
that's brilliant.
That's,
yeah,
awesome. In the paper, you cover national and international principles of sustainability. Mm-hmm. What are these?
Well, I don't think there's any one, you know, golden set of rules.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's about doing, you know, something. I think it's about making sure what you do does no more harm and that we're leaving, you know, where we are in a better place for the future generations.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are good principles to have, you know, so whether that's in terms of material use, whether that's in terms of you know, how we eat, what we wear, mm-hmm, you know, what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our lives are intrinsically touched by materials. We can't, you know, we're sitting on materials, we're wearing,
yeah,
materials, we,
yeah,
eat materials, you, yeah, know. So we can't get away from the fact that we're, you know, surrounded and use them all the time. So I think, yeah, those are some of the principles that we teach.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Becoming more, yeah, I think that's awesome. I think a really cool thing about sustainable materials is that it kind of defeats planned obsolescence, which I think really,
yeah,
you know, alienates you from what you use all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if your, yeah, phone's going to die in like a year's time, you have to get a new,
yeah,
one, or your shoe's going to, yeah, break immediately and you just have to get,
yeah,
you don't have any relationship with them.
Yeah.
Which is really sad.
It,
know,
is sad. It is sad. And I used to, we do a segment on sustainable design. And I used to teach a whole paper back in the day on sustainable design.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important. You know, and some of the students, you know, the idea of the paper is, you know, you guys are all going to be going out into the world and you may end up, you know, in companies or owning your own business where you can make some of these decisions,
yeah,
about how you design things or how things are designed. So you can make them, you know, is this a product that is disposable, in which case we make it maybe out of materials that can, you know, biodegrade or compost, you know, or is this something that we want to last for 10 years, 50 years, 100 years, you know,
mm-hmm,
and in which case we choose the materials accordingly, you know, and build things accordingly. So I think it's that planned obsolescence annoys me so
much.
Oh,
it's so frustrating, yeah.
And I think we're very slowly, you know, as a world, I suppose, working out of that. I think it's being recognised.
Mm.
And again, that's where your dollar can count. If we're not buying things that are disposable, not buying fast fashion, you know, we're not buying plastic cutlery, we're not, you know, doing those things, then that's sending a message to those companies,
mm,
that actually your products are not wanted.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're actually spending our money, we may be saving it, and I acknowledge, you know, things that actually, if we pay the true cost of fashion or organic food or whatever it might be, it is more expensive. It absolutely is, and it's difficult for people with low incomes, you know, students, other people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we can buy secondhand, we can do what we can, you know, to help. So we can still send that message.
Mm-hmm.
I think, sorry, I think I rambled.
No, I think it's great. I think it's good to get out
very
of
passionate about this.
No, for sure. I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think it's good to get out of that consumerist bubble.
Yeah.
Do you think it's, there's a little bit of a political question, but do you think it's possible to, you know, have a global economy that uses these huge global supply chains whilst being sustainable? Or do you think there's a fundamental difference? And
I think yeah, that's, I think it's quite difficult. I mean, obviously, we, you know, some things grow better in certain areas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's difficult, I think, for a small country, you know, and I mean that population wise, but also geographically, we're relatively small and we're quite isolated,
yeah,
to do everything. And, you know, we can't produce all the materials that we need. So, you know, we have to then think about how we get those and which ones are important to import. and which ones we can, you know, do locally, you know, or process locally. So I don't think we're ever going to get away from having to move things around the world, but we can do it in, you know, as sustainable a way as we can. You know, ship freight is more sustainable than air freight, for example. You know, do we really need to be buying fast fashion from China or the UK or
Or importing Nestle products?
I'm big
anti-Nestle fan.
That's fine. You know, and can we, you know, do we, if we have the money, can we support local initiatives? You know, so buying local is a really good, sustainable thing that we can do.
Totally.
So I don't think we can completely eliminate it, but I think we can do some things to help and, you know, get rid of some of the worst aspects of some of that, you know, moving of goods. You know, I mean, I think, you know, moving, sometimes you hear about, you know, the raw material is shipped to country A, then it's shipped back to where it was extracted from to be made into products. You know, now that seems a little bit ridiculous.
But I know, it's ridiculous. Like I just don't understand how it's more. I just don't understand how growing, say, cotton in Egypt and then flying it over to Bangladesh to be dyed, and then flying it over to China to be printed, and then flying it back to New Zealand. It's, how is that profitable? And who thought that was a good idea? It seems like people can say capitalism has, you know, brought innovation, has facilitated a really cool, massive flow of goods and people across the world, which is great. But also, they put the cart before the horse, because there's a problem that we're dealing with. That there's a lot of pollution that's been created through that process.
Absolutely.
You know?
And we need to be thinking more about that circular economy.
Yes.
And, you know, and I really like that. And I love that sort of principle that waste is food. So, you know, if you're going to, you know, if something has no value for you, you know, whether it's broken or you've finished with it, or, you know, it's scrap ends of a carrot that you're not going to put in your dinner, you know, whatever it might be. You know, how does that become food? Is it compost? Can it go to, you know, a secondhand shop? Can somebody else use it? And if it's broken, can we strip it out of its valuable materials and recycle and reuse those, either as parts or as materials? So, you know, if we think of that waste is food, suddenly it sort of changes your perspective, I think, on the things that you have. There's a thing that we talk about, you know, so we often think about, you know, we get materials from, you know, the ground, we mine them or we grow them or, you know, whatever. But actually there's a bigger thing now. There's a lot of valuable materials in the waste stream, you know, that whole idea of anthropometric or urban sort of mining. So, you know, we're throwing electronic goods away.
They've got
lots of gold and really valuable
lithium
rare metals.
And cobalt. And
So, you know, can we, you know, how do we get those out? You know, how do we extract those? You know, somewhere locally, like Cargill's Enterprise, they do a lot of e-waste processing. So, you know, we have some of that. It's really nice. It's just a pity we have to pay for it, you know, because that deters people from getting rid of their e-waste. But, yeah, it's interesting. And do we need to, you know, really do we need to have a new phone every year?
Exactly.
Yeah, you probably don't, you know, and that annoys me. Planned obsolescence is not just about the actual physical object, it's often about software and updates. And I think people are cottoning onto that now and realizing that that's not a good look.
You know,
big companies like Apple and Microsoft and things like that. So hopefully it will change.
And if the doll doesn't work, maybe we can use legislation. That could always.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's many countries. On the stick, you know? Many countries are bringing in product stewardship. So the idea that if you produce a, you know, a phone or you know, a washing machine or whatever it might be, that at end of life for that customer, whether it's broken or just they want to replace it, it's not working well, then actually it's up to the company that made it to do something with that. So and that's been working in Europe, particularly for cars, actually, for quite a long time. So there's really strict legislation in Europe around how much of a car needs to be recycled.
Yes, no, that's very true.
And what that means is that car companies, for example, run breakers yards. They actually take in their old cars so they can strip them down. They're designing them for recycling and reuse. So things like fastenings in a car, they're not trying not to use glues, for example, which are not good. You know, they're trying to use fastenings that can be undone easily so that something can be disassembled quickly. Mm-hmm. And that's often the barrier. So, you know, I think there's things that we can do, and more people are cottoning on, and legislation on product stewardship is really important. So, you know, that's the other thing we can do that's, you know, free. We can lobby government, you know, whether it's local or national or international or companies to actually do better, you know.
Vote with your dollar and just vote in general.
Absolutely. You know, use your voice.
Yes,
you know? And, you know, young people are, you know, are politicians and our business owners and, you know, magnets of the future. So, yeah, it's important that we know about these things and that we use our voice.
Yeah, work to fix them. I think we're running out of time here. I'm so thankful that you're coming on and having fantastic yarns.
No worries.
The last thing I want to ask you, which may or may not be in your wheelhouse again, but I want to know, how do we differentiate from products that might use greenwashing, you know, to disguise the fact that they aren't what they say they are, that they are sustainable? And how do we prevent companies from doing that in the first place?
I think we can, preventing them, we can call them out if it's obvious that they're not. I think there's lots of information. There's independent people. There's things like EcoChoice in New Zealand that, you know, do independent testing and things like that. So, you know, dig deeper. Go onto their website. Email them. Ask them questions, you know. I think we're much more aware of it now, you know, just because it's got a green label and a nice fern on it or something doesn't mean it's green necessarily. You know, think about what it means. You know, is it enough that you can recycle the bottle? Is it, but what are the chemicals that are within the bottle? You know, what do you need it for? Investigate other solutions if you have time, you know. Don't beat yourself up about it if you don't have time, you know. Use what you've got first as well. That's really important. So, yeah, I think greenwashing, I think it's becoming less. I think people are becoming much more aware and calling out companies for doing it, you know. And I think there's more checks and balances in place, you know, with things like EcoChoice, who do a really good job. And they have a great series of seminars. I've listened to a few recently on waste and sort of designing out waste that are really good with some local New Zealand companies. So, yeah, check those out as well. There's some great resources out there to help us.
And if people are wanting to find a really good resource for sustainable clothing, the app Good For You is incredible.
That's
an incredible app.
Incredible.
I knew someone a few years ago. Well, I still know them today. But they're dead to me. No, they're vegan and they use it to find clothing that, you know, it doesn't use animal products or anything. Very good
There's some really good resources out there. So we're very lucky. And I think in New Zealand, you know, that 2 degrees of separation, you know, we're much closer to the people producing stuff locally, so we can go, you know, we shouldn't be afraid to go and knock on their door or email them and ask them, you know what they're doing, you know, and how they're doing it.
That's awesome. I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for coming on. It was
no
fantastic
worries.
Having you.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Much appreciated. All right, folks, that was Professor Sarah Wakes talking about sustainable materials. Very, very awesome yarn there. Coming up on the program.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.